This is From Maine with Love, an Allagash Brewing podcast where we talk about beer, our community here in Maine, and things that generally make us happy. I feel like every time I say community, it's just hard. It's just a struggle. On this podcast episode, we have Patrick Chauvinel, senior R&D brewer, and now I think vintner.
Is that what you call me?
I don't know.
Okay.
Isn't that a maker of wine? It might just be a seller of wine.
Winemaker? Yeah, yeah, that just sounds weird to say out loud, actually.
Yeah.
I liked with the first thing that you said there.
Okay. Senior R&D
it's
brewer.
It's all research and development.
It's tasting pretty good, so I'd say you did a good job. But yes, senior R&D brewer officially. Liz Wilson, our marketing manager here.
Hello.
Liz. And then me, Brett, senior communication specialist is my title, I guess. All right, start it. Secret questions.
We start with the secret questions.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You just got to ease our way in here. Start talking about wine. No, don't stress. You know what, Patrick? I'll let you in a secret. My aim for the secret questions is to get our guest excited to talk about something.
I'm already excited to talk about it, so okay. I can't wait.
All right, I'll get you even more hyped up. What is currently fermenting in your home?
In my home? Oh, man. It's going to be such a disappointing answer because nothing right
now. Oh, no.
Well, what food reason? Or beverage? Yeah.
Maybe there's some like food fermenting in my refrigerator that shouldn't be. I've been baking a lot lately, but I don't have anything related to that. Yeah, there's nothing.
Well, you made up some pizza dough.
Yeah.
I saw you eating some tasty looking pizza at lunch.
Yeah, I did that over the weekend, but there's nothing actively fermenting right now.
Oh, I'm sorry, but...
I'm sorry.
I'm disappointed. No, that's that. It was.
Can you cancel this so I can get something going? You can ask me that again.
We'll try again.
We could definitely try again. All right, Liz, you're next. Yep. What are you learning to play on the piano currently?
Oh gosh, this is like such a basic answer because I was watching the Grammys and I heard Fast Car and I loved that song growing up and it was amazing. And of course, I went to piano class that week and I was like, I gotta play Fast Car. And
that's awesome.
I feel like me and everyone else in the world is listening to that song right now. I play a very poor rendition. And it's an interesting song because you think of it, I'm like, it's a slow song because you think of the da-da-da.
Yeah, it just repeats, yeah.
But she sings quite fast.
Yeah.
And I'm not skilled enough to like just play the piano, so I usually play the melody and it's like pretty quick. So I might regret this decision, but
and there's a lot of mileage.
No, song instead.
That's amazing. There's a lot of mileage in the lyrics, so that's what we were kind of talking about. Mm-hmm. It's like do you know that song?
Oh yeah,
it's like the best short story of a song ever. It's like that's goes incredible. So far. It's so powerful. Awesome song. Do I have a secret question?
Yes, Brett.
Oh,
do you have any interesting or unique nicknames that you grew up? That you're willing to share.
Oh, man.
Based on that smile, it looks like you
there's
do.
There's one. There's only one, and it's actually like, it's a fun small story. But the first answer is no, because for some reason, nicknames have never stuck for me. Like, so the person has to just brute force the nickname on me and never stop calling me it, because otherwise it just doesn't stick around. But this one person at the last agency I worked at, he was one of the cleaning people, and he called me Big Dog Brett. And it started being that he would say Big Dog Brett, and then I would go.
That's amazing.
And it was just between me and him, and I liked it so much that I was like, yeah, okay, that could stick around, but that was it.
You called yourself Bort once, and I think I still like always want to call you Bort.
Yeah, that's a good name.
Because it just makes me smile.
Yeah, and actually I also sometimes I add to that if you go like left two keys on the keyboard, my last name is Willis, it turns it into Wookus, like Wukkus. So Bort Wookus is like my alter ego. If I'm like, I don't even know what I do with that, but yes.
That's your ghost name for the books that you're going to be writing in the future?
Yeah, nice. Exactly. Once I can do the tell-all.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. to the topic at hand, we're here to talk about wine, and it looks like a little bit of cider too.
Technically, cider is wine. Oh, we don't have to go there.
My we're goodness. Going there.
No, man. Let's start there. That's actually the first thing. So I don't think we need to go super down the rabbit hole, but let's start with just kind of a definitional thing so we can define stuff. What is beer and what is wine?
Okay. Beer is a beverage that consists of four ingredients. It's water, malt, yeast, and hops. That makes beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a very thorough process to do that, obviously. But essentially, just from an ingredients perspective, that's kind of what it boils down to.
Mm-hmm.
For wine, you know, not everyone, I know I just said cider is wine, not everyone shares that opinion.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're looking at it from a process perspective, it's so, so similar. And the more important thing is it's not beer. And you need to, like, a brewer can't go into it with a brewer mindset. If they do, it's, you know, it's a very simple thing to do just from a processing perspective, because with beer is so complicated. Like, there are so many aspects of the process. And if you're talking about, like, a specific ingredient too, like hops, like, you could dedicate your whole life to learning one kind of, like, minute area of hop production and processing. And, you know, you'll have, like, a lifetime of work and research around that. And like, that's one tiny, tiny thing
right
in the grand scheme of beer ingredients and brewing in general. That's not to take away the importance of stuff in, like, the wine world.
Yeah.
Because, like, similar things can be said, but from like, if you're looking at it just from an ingredients perspective, there's just one ingredient.
Yeah.
Generally for wine. Huh. For traditional wine, you know, it's grapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's crazy to think that it's just one thing.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is crush it and then pitch some yeast into it or not, just have it ferment and it'll become wine. There's a lot of minutia in that process in terms of the proper way to go about that and what you need to do in order to make something that's really good. But I guess to break it down from like the basic perspective for ingredients, like, I guess that's the difference.
Sure.
With beer, those four ingredients, take one away, it's not beer. Well, yeah, take one away. So for a second, I was like, take yeast out, but like, spontaneous beer, there's still yeah, yeast
and you
in
could
there.
Say, I think from what you're describing, the wine yeast is kind of part of that. Like, it's the two, I guess. It's the berry. Well, but it's, you can get the yeast spontaneously in beer as well. There's some gray areas, yeah. But I think you're right. Like, I get it.
Right,
I think it
right,
makes
right,
total
right.
sense.
So yeah, I think those are the differences.
Well, also, I think we should add too, like, you're not just kind of shooting from the hip here. Like, you're actually taking a class in winemaking, or you taken classes and now you're taking a more something class?
Yeah, something like that. So, like, going back a few years ago when we first started getting interested in making cider, you know, with the understanding that we can't just jump into it with brewing knowledge, that we need to actually have a better understanding of how to do this properly, myself and Zach Boda, who's our QC manager, we took a class through CINA, they're the Cider Institute of North America, and it was kind of like their general production class. So you learn, like, this is how cider is made, basically. Yeah. And it was very sort of just taught from, like, a broad perspective. Didn't go into too many specifics from, like, the scientific perspective, which is something that, like, I'm very interested in once I get to become, you know, addicted into like a certain hobby or process or whatever it is. So we took that, and that was pretty helpful in just learning how to make wine in general, because again, it's very similar.
Right.
You know, there are some differences when you're comparing it to something like grapes, and even to make grape wine or wine, as people know it, You know, there's a lot of differences in terms of making red wines and white wines. So I guess to go back to your question, we took that course. Boda had taken a course through UC Davis of just like the introduction to, I don't know, wine making, I guess it was called, something along those lines. Sure. I took that, learned a bit more. Wanted some more information, and then I enrolled in their winemaking certification program, and I'm taking the wine production course through them right now. So
cool,
learning a lot. Just had to write a paper this past week.
Very exciting.
I had no idea. I just thought you were sort of like a mad scientist over at one of the buildings that were just like, let's figure this out. But I'm really glad to hear.
It's a bit of both, I'm not going to lie. but when I become interested in something, it's become sort of an obsession to some extent.
Sure.
I really like that about you.
Yeah.
And I don't know if my wife would say the same.
Well, I know I'm getting, whenever I have an interest in something, I know if I ask you about it, you're going to have some good information about it. So sweet. It's always, I appreciate
that's
it.
That's nice to hear.
And I feel like it's also worth adding, like Jason, our brewmaster, it's like a lifelong thing of his making cider. Like he's been making cider with his family, right? For like ever.
Yeah. I feel like, I knew why we started on the cider train because Jason has a lifelong love for it. And we have a lot of like amazing local apple varieties that I feel like are worth experimenting with here. Plus, you know, offering another option that is less glutinous in our tasting room. But I guess I sort of missed where the wine started.
That's the good question.
That is a good question. Where did it start?
Because I feel like, didn't we get with our cider making license, it was like, bonus, you can make wine.
Yeah. I mean, it's a winery permit.
Yeah.
It's essentially it is. So that allows us to make both cider and any fruit wine and to then blend any of those individual components together to come up with something.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Is that how it started?
Now, you know, so it started with cider for sure. And I think once we started going with cider, it just seemed like, you know, I'm trying to think and talk at the same time. I don't know when it actually started. I think there's just interest in something else.
Yeah.
Right now we pour cider in the tasting room and it's delicious. And, you know, I will say that initially the intention was to have something that was gluten-free.
Yeah.
But I honestly think that just hearing from feedback from folks in our tasting room, people were just more looking for like a beer alternative.
Yeah.
Whether it's an individual getting brought to the brew, someone who's like a super fan or just really likes beer in general, just having something available that's not beer for them to drink,
yeah,
I think is it sort of outweighs the fact that it is, I mean, we don't call it gluten-free because of some of the shared equipment and processing.
Mm-hmm.
But a low gluten
option
to have in there.
Totally. Yeah. And it feels, it's just more and more common that you're finding multiple offerings in tasting rooms now. I think, you know, making sure we have that available is awesome. So, yeah.
So it really started. So blueberry wine specifically, I guess if that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That was kind of the first foray into something outside of just apples. It's not something that's entirely unique to us. And, you know, folks have made blueberry wine where we are right down the road from where are we? I'm trying to orient myself.
Yeah.
Right down Industrial Way, Roz. Mm-hmm. They make blueberry wine there.
Oh, right.
Yep.
Bluette, they've been making blueberry wine for quite a while. So it wasn't something that was new to the market. And it seemed like because we had this knowledge now of how to make cider, we thought it would be fun to experiment and do a trial of blueberry wine, which is what we did. So the first thing that we actually did was just something very small. I bought like 150 pounds, used the press that we have here, which I think was another catalyst for being like, oh, we have all the equipment. Why can't we just try this out?
That's cool.
Yeah. We did one. It was just 10 gallons to begin with. We actually, it worked out so well that we poured that log at during Indigenous Peoples Day last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we have historically worked with Passamaquoddy to integrate their wild blueberries into beer. And because we had that on hand, we thought it would be fun to offer that. It went over well, and that was sort of like the catalyst to be like, okay, well, maybe we should do more of this.
Yeah, I think it like kicked in a day or two because I remember being like, nope, we don't need need to promote it again. I think it's gone.
Yeah, social media. Yeah. Do you still have the wine? Is it, oh, no. Yeah. And I mean, I remember that in particular coming so out of left field and being such a delight. Because it was just kind of like, we're a brewery and we made some said, what did the blueberry wine? And then we just like, and it was like, as we've said before, really freaking good. And we have some right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the first sample.
Yeah.
You know, it's because when you're comparing it to wine, oh, can I back up for a second?
No.
when you're comparing it to wine, no.
Sure, go for it.
One thing I wanted to mention, which we just did, I think, last week, is we changed the name of blueberry wine to wild blueberry wine.
Right.
And, you know, I put way too much thought into why we should make this name change, but really it boiled down to a bunch of things. I think because of the fact that it's made with wild blueberries, and wild blueberries are so distinct, it's actually a different species than your typical grocery store blueberry. They taste way better.
Yeah.
They're better for you when you're eating it in the raw form. And you know, there's a million other reasons why they're so good. I think, and the fact that that's all we use in this wine.
Yeah.
I think it helps. Like honor the fruit as well as the folks who, you know, cultivate the land.
Yeah.
Aren't they like hand harvesting all these or like these, like it's the low bush thing. It's like a little rake with a bunch of long teeth and like you just start literally raking the bush and it's intense.
Yeah. It is.
If you have the opportunity to come to Maine in August.
August, September around then.
Poke around for some wild blueberries. They are a special treat, and Mainers love them a lot.
Yeah, they're so good.
Yeah.
So anyways, we decided to call it wild blueberry wine because it like that's what made it. You know, that's what it's made of. So, did you ask me a question?
I was just asking, can we just describe this wine? I feel like it's you know, we've got it in front of us. So just like, you know, I think just talking about profile, what it kind of compares to for people who've never tried a blueberry wine.
So the first thing that I wanted to mention is just alcohol. When you're comparing it to grape wine, the alcohol is much lower. So although it's the same process, you know, we take a similar amount of fruit, get the same amount of yield, more or less in terms of juice, the alcohol is a lot lower. That has mostly to do with just the amount of available sugars that's in the fruit to begin with.
Right.
When you're talking about grapes, it's closer to, I'm trying to think of a different way to put this, it's just very high sugar content. The winemakers speak in terms of bricks. So I guess for comparison's sake, it might make sense. So wine grapes are around 20 to 26 bricks or anywhere in between there, which would make for anywhere from like a 10% to 14% wine. With blueberries, they don't have the same amount of available sugar. So it's closer to 10 to 12 bricks, which means it's going to be around 5.5 to 6.5% alcohol.
That's cool. And I feel like another notable factor or like aspect of this is tartness, because it definitely has a little bit of acidity to it. And it's cool because I feel like you're used to in wine thinking you're finding acidity, but actually finding like tannic flavor, you know, kind of that like that you can kind of feel on the roof of your mouth. Whereas like this is kind of the opposite. It's like not really tannic. It has some tannic qualities to it, but it's more like tart. Is that correct?
I think so. And I think the fact that it's carbonated, which is another thing worth noting, sort of elevates that acid character.
Yeah.
But it's it's tart in like a refreshing way, totally. I guess, is the way I would put it. Not in like a mouth puckering, kind of hurts when it goes down.
Yeah, sort of like way. Hurting your jaw.
Yeah.
Making your jaw clench. Now I'm trying to think of what would be like the, it's, I don't know. I'm trying to think of the equivalent of tartness that is in this. It's like a, I don't want to say lemonade because that makes you think of sweetness, but like, I don't know. It's not even that tart. It's just a little bit of acidity. That's super nice.
Yeah. And then the other thing about this that I think is very cool and it sort of makes it unique to us is, well, one, the fact that it's made entirely of wild blueberries, that's unique to us. I don't know of, I could be wrong here, but I don't know of any other place in Maine that is making a blueberry wine solely with wild blueberries. Hmm. So that's fairly unique.
Yeah.
The other thing is the yeast that we use. The yeast was isolated out of a cool ship barrel. Mm. So we have a program internally. Oh man, I can go down a whole rabbit hole talking about this.
I was going to say, how are you going to do this one? We don't have too much time.
Yeah, here, I know. So anyways, it was a like a brewing yeast strain that was isolated out of a barrel of our spontaneously fermented beer.
Yeah.
So the yeast strain is unique to us. Nobody else in the world has this yeast strain.
Huh.
And the yeast strain came from Maine.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty special. So blueberries came from Maine, yeast came from Maine. It's not a naturally fermented, but it's still local to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think
hyper-local.
Hyper-local,
yeah. It's literally here.
And I think the yeast that we use sort of helps elevate those like fruity characteristics in the wine.
What made you, because like with the cider, we've used a Pet Nat strain.
Yep.
Like what made you decide cool ship strain versus that Pet Nat?
For that specific reason.
Oh, nice. Story.
I was like, you know, it would be really cool if this works out because it just would be a really nice story too.
Yeah.
And in the end, it worked out. So.
Yeah, because it tastes really good.
And it was tricky because in an ideal world, at least from my perspective, when we're doing something new, it's always helpful to trial a bunch of different yeast strains.
Yeah.
We couldn't do that with the blueberry wine
right.
When we first started because of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, what you do is you take fruits, you pulverize them somehow, mush them up to allow all the juices to come out. They undergo what's called a maceration fermentation, and maceration just really refers to liquid being in contact with the skins and seeds.
Hmm.
And you pitch the yeast in that process.
Mm-hmm.
So unless I was doing like a bunch of different smaller, tiny batches,
right.
which wouldn't make a ton of sense, I had to sort of commit to one in the first place and cross my fingers that it was going to be good.
That's awesome.
So
I just have a quick aside. Like that yeast strain, I mean, when we talk about our cool ship beers and spontaneous fermentation, that yeast strain can take like years to fully ferment out that sort of thing. So like in this process, it didn't take that long. Or how long did it take?
No, it's a normal. So it's a normal Saccharomyces cerevisiae strain. Huh.
Which
can use in wort and it'll ferment out just fine. And we just caught it in a particular time in the life cycle of the spontaneous cool ship beer, where it was present enough that it was able to be like isolated, that it showed up on a plate and we could isolate it and kind of propagate it up from there.
That's cool.
So, they are in those barrels at certain periods of time. However, the amount that are in there is, you know, you need a certain amount of yeast in order to ferment something rapidly.
Hmm.
When there's only a tiny amount in there, it's just going to slowly kind of chip away at sugars. So I guess that's like really the big difference.
Okay. That makes sense.
And you know in the process when to...
It was a guess.
I was like, jeez Louise, that's incredible.
We tested a bunch of barrels.
Got it, okay.
And we just were lucky. And
nice.
It's finding yeast strains like that is it's difficult.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when we've done this before, it just doesn't work out. You'll do 6, 8, 10 different fermentations and you know can't find anything. So it's pretty special when you can find one and you just really hope that it's actually good and not just sort of like, meh. This isn't special at all.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Well, that makes this even more exciting than I ever even knew.
I know, right?
That's awesome.
All right. So this next one, I guess, as I was saying with the blueberry wine, this is nothing new. You know, folks have been making blueberry wine for however long. I don't know, 100 years, couple hundred years. People make it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that history.
neither do I. With the second one, I think this is fairly unique and special, really. This is made with honeyberries. So honeyberries are a fruit that we've worked with in beer many, many times for the last, I don't even know how many years.
Three. I feel
plus.
It's like turned into like honeyberry town over here. Yeah.
Brett and I were joking last podcast that we have a mild obsession with honeyberries.
Well, yeah. There's also the running joke that our brewmaster has a controlling share in a honeyberry farm that we get all our honeyberries from, which is coincidentally called Allegash View Farms, I believe.
Yeah,
it is. So we think he's secretly doing a scheme to sell it. That's a joke. He's definitely not. Honeyberries are really good, but it's just too funny.
So because we have been working with them for a while, and in beer they have this like Venice character that I thought was really cool, we figured it was worth trying to see if we can make a wine with it. We did a trial similar to what we did with blueberry wine. It was just a small fermentation, 10 gallons. With this one, I think we did use the Pet Nat yeast strain.
Cool.
And it was so acidic that it was undrinkable, but the aroma was incredible. Like it just smelled amazing. It was so good. But from an acid perspective, it's undrinkable. Like it was disgusting. You couldn't do it. It like would burn going down.
Whoa.
And that's because if you're looking at it from purely an acid basis, there's a test you can do called titratable acidity, where when you're comparing it to something like cider is probably around 7, a TA of 7 titratable acidity. And then if you use that same sort of measurement for honeyberry wine on its own, it's about 25.
Wow.
So it's incredibly, incredibly sour. Looked for ways to biologically reduce that sourness. So you can encourage what's called malolactic fermentation, where if you pitch a certain bacteria, it will consume malic acid and then convert it into lactic acid. So it's also an acid, but not all acids are the same.
Right.
Some can be more harsh than others. Lactic is like a softer, cleaner acid, whereas malic is just a little more aggressive. So we did a trial like that. It did reduce it, but it was still too much. We had done this, and you know, we realized that on its own we couldn't make something that was like a solo, this is just made with honeyberries kind of thing.
Yeah.
And knowing that, we still committed to doing something bigger. So the following year, season, harvest, whatever you want to call it, we got pretty much a similar amount of honeyberries than we did to blueberries, and we did a full-scale batch. Had it ferment on its own in one vessel, and I had maybe 25 gallons left over that I didn't really have a home for. We had an extra bourbon barrel from a beer that we just didn't have enough beer to fill it in. So I put honeyberry wine in that, topped it off with some cider, and kind of just let it sit and do its thing for months. Pulled a sample off of that, and it was like incredible. I'm pretty sure I giggled out loud the first time I sipped it, because I was like, oh my God, like this is it. It was still too tart, still too tart. But it was like almost to the point where it was just pleasant and not, burn your esophagus tart.
Yeah.
So we took that barrel. We ended up blending it with another barrel of cider. So in theory, there's more cider in here than there is actual honeyberry wine. But when you're smelling it and tasting it and looking at it, like it looks like a red wine.
Yep.
And when you're comparing it to blueberry wine, which is around 5%, this is 8.4%.
Sure.
And
for ABV.
ABV,
right.
Yeah. So it, you know, smells like a wine. It tastes like a wine. It we serve it still, which is something that we've never done before, never intentionally done. There was one cool shit beer that didn't fully carbonate.
Yeah.
Bardis, is that what it was?
Yeah, Bardis. Yeah, exactly. Because it was like a super slow fermentation. Was it?
I mean, yeah.
I don't know if you were being facetious.
No, it was really good. It was super interesting.
Yeah. So yeah. The fact that we, you know, commit, like tasting it out of the barrel, it just did not feel like carbonation would do anything. It'd probably take away from it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so we went with still. How we're serving it right now, because this is still a fairly new thing for us, is on the warmer side. To, you know, similar. We're trying to like treat it like you would
a wine.
A wine. Yeah. Because really that's what it is.
I mean, this does honestly drink like a Merlot or something like that. Like it actually has, I think you could fool somebody by just giving them this and they'd be, oh, you know, what vintage, what, it, like if you told them, didn't tell them anything about what it was.
I think so too.
Yeah.
And I think this, you know, the blueberry wine is special. Don't get me wrong. This, I don't know of anyone out there that's doing anything quite like this.
Yeah.
And like, it's things like this that really get me excited about, you know, what else is there that we could be looking into and making and offering people that come here.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. It's like the wine world just... It's a whole rabbit hole you can go down, and it's been really fun. And honestly, the more I learn about wines and the process, the more excited I get in terms of using that knowledge in the beer side of things.
Sure.
Yeah.
We've already done that once. We got some grapes up from Presque Isle. It's these grapes called Brianna grapes. They're a hybridized white grape variety. We got them in and put some of our cool shit beer on it. And because of things that I'd learned through classes and whatnot, two things that happen when you're undergoing that like maceration fermentation. Well, I shouldn't say two, but I guess two things came to mind for me is you're going to be pulling color from the grape skins. There's a compound called anthocyanins that's responsible for...
Oh, of course.
For color.
sorry.
And
that was too good a term.
Honey berries are very high in anthocyanins, which is why it retains that like real bright red color.
Yeah.
To the point where when I pressed this in the large batch, I had red hands basically for 3 days. And the day I pressed it, it was in the summertime. And we were taking our kids to this like... golf course pool.
Yeah.
Because our friends are members there. Mm-hmm. And I was like sitting by the pool. My kids were like, come in. And I was like, I don't know if I get in this pool if I'm actually going to stain the water red. Like, I honestly didn't know if that was going to happen. It didn't.
That's good. That's
but
good.
My hands were red for like 3 days. So it's like very high
honey
in
berries
color.
Are the gift that just keeps on.
Oh man, they just Every time you describe them, it just gets worse.
Yeah.
It's like you can't describe what they look like. The flavor is like I don't know what it's like, but honestly, they're good and this is super tasty. So don't worry if it comes out well.
And where was I going with that?
Cool ship.
Cool ship. Yeah. You're pulling color from the grape skins during that period of time. And you're also pulling tannins. Mm-hmm. So tannins are sort of that like character that can be considered astringent, at least in beer. In wine, you sort of want the presence of some tannins, mm-hmm. depending on the style that you're looking to make.
Right.
It helps with like the mouthfeel and structure. The longer you allow beer, in this case, to stay on grapes, you'll stop extracting color within maybe 5 days, but you'll continue to extract tannins. Historically, when we've tried to do wild beer aged on grapes, I think we treated it like we do any other fruit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we give it 2, 3, 4 months. If we did that with grapes, which we've done before, and we've definitely dumped beer that we aged on fresh grapes. I don't know. It's hard to remember right now the exact reasons. Because not all beers work out over there,
yeah.
But But there's probably a good chance that we dumped it because it was just so astringent and undrinkable. With this beer, took it off grapes after 3-4 weeks because, you know, it was getting to that point where it was like too much. So being able to utilize some of this knowledge from the wine side of things and beer, I think is awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to, like, the more I learn in wine, the more, you know, there can be some crossing of worlds. So I guess that's where I was going with that point. Sorry about that.
No, amazing. I feel like, speaking of grapes, did we just like blow past them because we're like, grapes? Or are we going to like build up to grapes? Or, I mean, Maine is not a grape mecca.
Not a grape mecca.
But
it's a great question and a question that I've asked. It all depends on, you know, whether that's something that folks would want. People that are coming to our tasting room, if they're requesting some kind of actual wine, grape wine, then I think it's something definitely worth exploring. Yeah. But to your point, you're right. There are people that are growing grapes in Maine. A lot of them are growing them because they're making wine with them.
Yeah.
There aren't a ton of people that are growing grapes just to grow them because that's crazy because you need to make money.
Yeah.
However, we did find a few last year that are doing
grapes.
Just that. Yeah. Either they're like a winery and planning and they're growing grapes right now and they just have no home for them. Which was a few cases of some folks I talked to, or there's this one place that just they grow grapes and they provide it to folks in the state or beyond that are interested in them. But that said, if we really did want to offer a wine, which I would be so excited to make, I think it would be wise of us to look a little more broadly.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with other fruits in New England and New England states. And
I mean, not too far away from us. There's a lot of, I mean, Long Island's not that far. New York's not that far.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Long Island is New York. I do know that. different regions.
Different New York.
New York.
I mean, there are folks growing grapes in Vermont, too.
That's true. Wow. Yeah, they've got some interesting hybrid things happening there.
And I think that's, for me personally, that's what I get most excited about. Taking a grape that's already a known thing, that would be cool to do, but taking this hybridized grape that no one really knows about and sort of making our own wine based on how we want that to like express itself, that's what I'm excited about doing potentially.
Cool.
Yeah, and I think in there's something really cool too about offering new experiences. Like I feel like that's like foundational. It literally is foundational to who we are as a brewery. And like if we can continue that into these different realms that excite us, like I'm just thinking of having like if you came to the tasting room and you didn't know what you were going to get, but you had the trust that it's going to be cool and good, like both of these. I before this year was not necessarily a blueberry wine fan, and I definitely was not a honeyberry wine / hybrid cider hybrid fan, but now I am, and it's really cool to see it. And so I think like the more that we can establish that trust that like you might not know what this is, but you're going to taste it and you're going to be like, whoa, that is so nice and balanced and nuanced. And like, I think that's kind of what we're delivering right now. So kudos. Good job. Yeah. It's cool.
It is cool.
What's this last one?
Oh, this last one, I knew we were talking about wine, but, you know, because of the similarities. This, last year, leading up to Harvest, or actually this was from 2 years ago, we did a number of trials with cider, and this was the one, you don't have to like it.
No, that's
totally fine.
Would I have had this before?
Yes. It's really? Been on twice, once fresh, once aged.
That's funny.
This was the first time in making something that wasn't beer that once it was fermented, and this is a blend of two different ciders, once I tasted it, I was like, this might sound weird. I felt like I didn't need like validation that it was good. Like, I was like, this is good.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that this was good.
Yeah.
And it just made me feel really good. Like, oh, I think I know what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
So this is a blend of, again, two different ciders that were fermented separately. One was made with this apple called Northern Spy.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was made with this apple called Gold Rush. So the Northern Spy finished on the little sweeter side. Gold Rush was very acid forward. And this is basically a 50-50 blend of the two. So it's what's called like a semi-dry cider. So it's not like the cider that we have pouring in the tasting room where it's fermented to completion, totally dry, no more sugars. There's some residual sugar there, but it's just enough to sort of balance that acidity.
Yeah.
And it's probably the best thing so far. Maybe this honey berry wine beats it out a little bit. But from a cider side of things, I think it's the best cider I've ever made.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about it. And I'm excited to be able to offer sort of one-offs like this, which we have in our winery fermenting right now. We have a lot of either single orchard ciders, so a bunch of different apples from a particular orchard. We have a few single varietal ciders. There's one from one of my favorite apples called Chiseled Jersey.
Chiseled Jersey?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That should just be like, what is this the name of?
I believe weed was legal in the state where that was come up with.
I was trying to, and I had to like put a name on the barrel head of all these. I was like, I don't know what to do. I was like, Jersey. Ah, Bruce Springsteen. So I put Bruce. On the barrel head for that one.
That's amazing.
And so we have a bunch of others over there, and I think we'll get to a point at some point this year where, you know, we'll either have our dry cider on, the Allagash cider as folks know it, or it'll be like one of these one-offs where it's something like unique and interesting and maybe something like this 50-50 blend.
The reason I asked if I've had it before was because I think compared to, or maybe after having these other ones, it did taste like something I'd never had. And I agree. It is super duper good. Yeah. It's like just, it's definitely not like any other cider I've ever had. Really tasty. Cool.
So yeah, that's why I brought it.
Nice. I
hope it wasn't like a just showing off.
Awesome.
Check this out. You guys ever had cider before? Nope.
Yeah. No, this is awesome. I did have one more question, and it is kind of a to the side, and I don't want to require a ton of explanation from you, but I just wanted to get into it because it's just like, I feel like it is a perfect example of the type of innovation that's going on in our like 100 space, like the sort of wild space, and it's Cellars Number 10, that beer. The description of this beer, this has nothing to do with wines, this has nothing to do with cider. I just was looking up this, oh no, I guess it is kind of there, but like, this is the most complicated beer I've ever seen in my life.
I don't think it's the most complicated one we've done. I mean, number 8, before I talk about number 10, I can talk about number 8 real quick. Number 8, we took barrels of this beer that we called Churchill, which was basically our triple with some bacteria that we pitched. The bacteria is called Minions. Lactopedia. It was in these used wine barrels. Then we transferred that beer into fresh bourbon barrels, and then we transferred that beer onto cherries. And I guess maybe as I say that out loud, that wasn't overly complicated, but there's a lot of steps.
And the way
you have to talk about these beers, you have to describe it in like, you know, a couple of words to describe all that is challenging.
Yeah.
So agreed. For the one that you're referencing, I forgot where we landed in terms of like the actual name.
It's just number 10. This is the description you gave. So
it's,
like literally what we called it.
I think we're calling it blended saison.
Blend of wild ales aged
with honey aged in something.
Amphora. Yeah.
So we had done some R&D trials in the small scale of taking Cool Ship and adding honey to it to see if you could really get like the character of the honey once the honey was fermented.
Sure.
The two that we did were just so good. Huh. And one in particular used wild blueberry honey. You could get these like blueberry notes. Mm-hmm. And it was crazy.
Yeah.
And honestly, you can go down this whole like honey world if you want to. There's so many different kinds.
They're everywhere. God.
There's a nonprofit called the National Honey Board where every
are you,
year
are you like a member of the board?
Not a member, no. But I took like their annual like brewers retreat course or whatever you want to call it.
That's awesome.
And they teach you about like how honey is made, but more importantly, like these distinct differences from like varietal to varietal.
Yeah.
And there's this one, Meadow Foam. Meadow Foam honey. It's out in the Pacific Northwest.
Wow.
The honey, I assume, is from that, or bees that are around, like, Meadow Foam flowers?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I don't know, but I assume so.
I just made that up, maybe. okay. But the honey is crazy. It smells like toasted marshmallows.
Oh, wow. My God.
Like, straight up toasted marshmallows. Wow. And it's like unbelievable. Brulee. I couldn't believe it. It's crazy. Anyways, so honey's very cool. And that blueberry honey, like, you could actually smell, like, maybe there's a little bias going into it.
Right, because like, you know where
smell
it came
blueberries
from.
And you smell them. But I swear it's, so we did that as an R&D trial, like a very small couple gallons, put it on tap. We wanted to sort of recreate that for real beer. And the clay amphora pots that we had that were open. So we took some Cool Ship. We put it in those vessels, added some of that wild blueberry honey. We had done a different, beer with a different honey as well. We did a Cool Ship beer using buckwheat. And we added buckwheat honey to those. We ended up dumping those. Unfortunately, not all beers work out over there.
Yeah.
But for this one in particular, so Cool Ship with honey in those pots, because I thought it was cool to sort of tie in the old use of those pots,
clay pots.
They used to have like fermenting mead and honey wine, if you want to call it that. So kind of like an ode to how those vessels used to be used with spontaneous beer and honey. Then we took that beer out of those vessels, and it was a little too tart, so we blended in this other beer that we made. It was some Snow Report.
Oh, yeah.
But that we added some bacteria to. So Snow Report is honey saison, which is what we called it.
Yep.
The honey that we used in that beer is wildflower honey. So it's this blend. It was about 25% Snow Report.
Yeah.
So it's Cool Ship beer, Snow Report, each with two different types of honey. Then we're taking that blend and we'll be conditioning it with a third type of honey. And that third type of honey came from Maine. It's nothing specific. Actually, it was our old, I forgot what her role was here. She worked in finance. Yeah. Erin, she's a master beekeeper.
She kept bees for us. Yeah.
Yep. She used to tend to the Allagash hive, which she's going to be bringing back since the warehouse moved.
Wow.
She just needs to spot out a new location.
Nice.
I think it's that same hive, but she had just moved it to her home.
Yeah.
So it's honey from that hive. And we've never conditioned. So by condition, I mean like you're adding sugar or in this case, honey. To beer, and then you're putting it in bottles, and then that sugar will be consumed in the bottle and then carbonated naturally.
Yeah.
We've never used anything other than just sugar for that sort of thing. So by using honey, you're going to get, fingers crossed, this like honey character that in a normal fermentation, you're sort of driving that off because when you ferment anything, you have to off-gas it.
Yeah.
And there are certain volatiles, like pleasant aromas that you sort of lose. Like if you can smell it when it's fermenting, those are gone.
Huh.
Those are no longer in the thing that's fermenting.
Yeah.
So by adding it and then packaging it, you know, we can't lose those honey aromas. Those are going to stay in the beer. So yeah, totally not complicated at all.
Yeah.
Three different kinds of honey, two different kinds of beer, one spontaneous, one's not.
How many vessels?
And an amphora vessel.
If you're still with us, to reiterate, your head may be falling off, Patrick is beaming, and the beer is coming out in our cellars. So that's all you need to know.
Yeah. And I think like, I guess the thing I was getting at with that question was kind of like understanding that it's like part science in that you know what you're going to get, part happenstance in that like, oh, this vessel's free, wouldn't that be cool? And part like juking and jiving with what you're getting, because you're getting something and you're saying, okay, cool, well, I guess let's add this because wouldn't that be really cool? And so it's like, it's just a cool amalgamation of multiple processes that ends up with like a really tasty beer that's super hard to explain, but is like, just drink it, just try it.
Yeah,
it's going to be awesome.
And we could never make it again.
So get it while it's here.
I think the best way, I guess, there's a few ways to experience all the things that we've been talking about today.
Yes.
The wine and cider are available in our tasting room on an ongoing basis. So just pop by our tasting room and we'll have presumably both of these.
The plan is to always have a cider on and to always have a wine,
yeah.
Whether it's blueberry wine or the volume that we produce of this other wine is low. However, we're doing 3 times the amount right now, which should be ready in a few months' time. So fingers crossed that eventually at some point, maybe this summer, that'll be an option for the tasting room.
A lot of people come to the tasting room in summer.
Yeah.
And then I would say the cellars is our tour and so our tasting experience here at the brewery. And Patrick referenced our winery, which is folded into the Wild Barrel Room. So you can come visit us in the cellars. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, great. Yeah. I think it's a small but mighty little winery right now.
Yeah.
But come on,
it's
and
pretty
see
full.
It. Yeah.
So, yeah, come check it out.
It's awesome.
See Bruce, the barrel.
Yeah, come see Bruce.
Well, Patrick, thank you as always.
Yeah, for sure.
For the time. This is, I mean, awesome. This, like, yeah. It's so cool to just hear about everything and just kind of like, you know, I feel like I always absorb a little bit of your enthusiasm after these. And I'm just walking around like, yeah, yeah, you're making stuff.
I mean, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about things like this because I love it.
Yeah.
So anytime someone wants to listen to me talk about any of these things, I'm like, yes, 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 I'll do it for sure.
I'm happy to. Well, good. Well, we definitely will in the future.
And thanks for bringing samples.
Yeah. For sure.
It's even more exciting.
Very exciting. Awesome. Absolutely. Well, cheers. Cheers. Hope to see you soon. This has been an Allagash Brewing production. If you have something you'd like us to talk about, or a question for our team, just send us an email at podcast@allagash.com. And as always...